We are now ready to hear our third and final oral argument on the calendar this morning. Counsel, I'm going to call the case while you're settling in there. No rush, though. That case is Maple Ridge Homeowners Association Appellant versus Hiscox Insurance Company, Inc. Respondent. And the case number is A230478. And good morning to both of you. It's nice to see you. Just a couple words before we hand the proceedings over to you. I wanted to make sure you understood our timing requirements. Both of you will have 15 minutes to present your arguments, and appellant will have an opportunity for a five-minute rebuttal, regardless of how long you take during your primary argument. The time will be counted down at the lectern in the center of the room. Counsel has already demonstrated his knowledge of the correct operation of the button that makes it go up and down, so I don't need to warn you about that. I would like to tell you that these arguments are being played via Zoom live. I've used the word live streaming. I've been told that's actually incorrect if you're using the Zoom platform, which is why I sounded so awkward in explaining that. Nonetheless, the arguments can be viewed by viewers on Zoom live. We are also making a recording of the arguments this morning, and the recordings will be available. They're audio only. They'll be available on our website shortly. And to make sure we have the best quality recording possible, I ask that you both identify yourselves and the party you're representing before you get started with your arguments. That concludes my comments. I will turn things over to you now, counsel for appellant. You may proceed when you're ready.
Good morning, Your Honors, counsel. May it please the court. Alexander Jaden of Smith, Jaden, Johnson Law Firm. And I represent the appellant, Maple Ridge Homeowners Association. It's nice to be back in person here, so this is a fun change. The questions before the court today have an intersection between civil procedure and substantive insurance appraisal law. So there are four court orders that are up on appeal, and there's really three of them that the appellant is challenging and asking this court to overturn. The conclusion we're looking for, so the remedy that we're ultimately asking the court for, is the court to vacate an appraisal award and allow our client to have a full, fair hearing on a disputed insurance claim and the opportunity to present the totality of their evidence rather than a limited version of it, which is what happened here. I'd say in the simplest terms, Your Honors, the argument before the court that we have is my client received numerous discovery sanctions in a case that was stayed in front of the district court in which no actual discovery was served. I find that problematic that the procedures by which a court would address these procedural issues weren't followed here. If we go through sort of the history.
So on the appraisal award that you want vacated, that you didn't have a free and fair opportunity, what is it about that? I mean, that there was an appraisal. Is it just focused on go back and figure out the three buildings that were excluded? Or, I mean,
that's the layup on that part. Yes, Your Honor, the three buildings that were excluded, the other buildings are removed. To me, that's the layup of what's aired. What we can't address, or I can't tell you what impact it had, is the fact that a court order is presented to this panel saying that my client had done something
wrong. But it seems like the only thing, I mean, Maple Ridge, I'm just curious because I'm not saying we're going to go down this path, but I want to know what relief you're asking for. I mean, Maple Ridge's adjuster and then their appraiser, I mean, they presented whatever evidence except for maybe the three buildings, right? Well, I can't remember if the adjuster pulled or the appraiser pulled. I'm sorry, I'm not being very precise there. And said, well, okay, we give up because of the court order. We don't have the original manufacturer, make, color, serial number, et cetera, for those three buildings. So is it just a rehearing on the three buildings then?
No, it would be a full new appraisal.
Why?
Because the remedy, Your Honor, would be to vacate the appraisal award.
Why? What did you not, what was Maple Ridge not allowed to present?
Pursuant to the
at the appraisal
Shonage versus American Family case, we were denied a reasonable opportunity to present evidence to the appraisal panel.
How?
Because we were not allowed to present evidence on those buildings.
On those three buildings?
Yes, and in not being able to present
evidence. And then how for any other buildings?
Well,
were you interfered with in your opportunity to present?
Only in the impact that it would have potentially had towards the credibility of the presentation by saying that Maple Ridge had done something wrong, and that's why they were being punished and being told they're not allowed to present evidence on these three buildings. Why? Well, what is that? So I can't tell you what impact it had. And on top of that, Your Honor, I don't think there is a mechanism that the court has to do a partial vacation or a partial rehearing. I think it's a binary proposition.
What is that based on?
That based on the only law I see in vacating an award is to vacate the award. I don't have anything as a partial vacation.
What are you citing to there, then?
I think the cleanest one is the Shonich versus American Family case. An appraisal award can be called into question if parties not receive notice, not an issue here, or denied the reasonable opportunity to present evidence at the appraisal. I mean, I think that is the crux of our case, is we weren't provided the ability to present all of our evidence, therefore calling the whole award into question, and the only remedy being we have to throw out the whole award. We can't take part of it.
Okay. Then going back to the merits of your argument, I mean, there were these court orders, and it seems like Maple Ridge's counsel, which I guess was you,
yes,
you know, kind of said, well, we don't have it. We don't have to give it. We're not going to give you. I mean, why is that wrong? Why was the district court wrong in its rulings?
And yes, it was myself and colleagues that did it, and I don't think it was as flippant of a response as I don't have to do that. I think what our requirements are important in this issue, Your Honor. So take maybe a minute to kind of give the context of this answer. We have turned in an insurance claim. The insurance company investigates the claim. They make a claim decision. Okay, all of the opportunities there for whatever investigation they would need to do, that perfectly available to do that. There are requirements under the contract, the insurance policy, that provide cooperation and the requirement, if requested, to provide documents, reasonable requests in your care, custody, and control is the general standard. So we have a claim decision made, but that's not the end. We dispute the claim, okay? Maple Ridge says, we don't agree, insurance company, with what your position is. We're going to invoke this appraisal clause, this alternative dispute resolution mechanism, to get to the answer of what is the actual amount of loss, okay? Because of some back and forth, a motion to compel the appraisal is brought to the court, along with a stay of litigation, right? So the purpose of this is to say, we're going to take this matter to the appraisal panel and have them make their decisions. We're not litigating, okay? In that stay order, that's the first order that the court issues, it says, okay, we're going to stay litigation, we're going to compel appraisal. You've got a week to provide these documents that had been requested. Okay, they were reasonable requests. We do that. 5 months later, there's a new request that hadn't previously been made. This is now the make, model, and serial number of all the roofs. We can't provide it. We don't have that information. So the problem combines here.
Didn't your adjuster at some point have them? I guess that's one area of confusion for me.
Sure, and I'll answer with what the standard is, then tell you what happened. The standard of any request under the duties under the policy are going to be a reasonable request, and it's going to be information in the care, custody, and control of the insured. Okay? There's plenty of situations in which information outside of that is requested in an authorization from an insurance company to go at it. A great example of that is usually cell phone records. I don't have my cell phone records, to be honest with you. I have no idea how to get them, but I'm happy to tell what my phone number is and give you an authorization to go to Verizon. Totally normal way to get things. Here, the information requested was who built stuff, what components they were, and when they were built. This is 20-some years ago. My client is a HOA association. They're not individual homeowners that built these houses. They're subsequent owners. There's different boards. This information isn't readily available. Okay? So what actually happened was, I think, way above and beyond what is required under the policy or any statute, went around town asking every supply house and everybody, what do you know about this? So there was some information that was able to be found. I will point out that that information was just as readily available to the insurance company during their investigation as well. Then we come back to what we're in front of court is, Your Honor. And now the court has said, if you don't give this information, I'm punishing you. Well, Your Honor, there's been no discovery request made. We're in court. There's no dispute that there's been no discovery requests. At best, these are ongoing requests under the insurance policy of a claim that's already been fully adjusted and is now an appraisal. So the court, I believe, issues by orders 2, 3, and 4, is sort of chasing its tail now. It has created a standard in which I'm telling you have to provide something you don't have, and if you don't, I'm punishing you. Well, shockingly, we weren't able to provide all the stuff we didn't have, and we got punished for it. So at the end of the line, whether we look at it as going, this is crazy that you're getting punished for failing to provide stuff you don't have, that's one path that I think that the results here should be overturned. The second path is back to where I started, and that's just a civil procedure question here. We have a stay of litigation. We have no discovery that was served. We had no initial disclosures. Discovery is not even allowed in Minnesota civil litigation without having a discovery plan and your initial disclosures. None of those happened in this case. We have no discovery that was ever served. No meeting, confer, conference on disputed discovery. No motion to compel discovery.
Well, I don't know that the district court was confining itself to, you know, your classic civil procedure discovery analysis. I think, I mean, at least from my review of the record, the district court was issuing orders, for Maple Ridge to get some information, and the district court perceived Maple Ridge to be in violation of those orders.
I will not concede that that was allowable, but let's say for the sake of this argument, Your Honor, that's sort of what happened.
Yes, and I guess I'd be interested to hear your perspective on whether that was allowable as well.
It's not allowable, and even without the stay of litigation, it's not allowable. And here's the reason why Rule 37 has procedures in it. Let's say by a different name, the court was allowing this discovery. There's a reason why there's procedures in place to address disputes. There's a reason why you have formal discovery so it's clear what you're being asked. There's a reason why you're forced to have a meet and confer conference to try to work it out outside of the court. There's a reason why there's briefing so the parties can have an opportunity to address these issues. With no formal briefing on here, maybe the court never really understood that this stuff wasn't information that Maple Ridge had. Maybe the judge really did think that we were trying to obfuscate when we weren't. But with no formal briefing process, no true argument on this, there was no real opportunity for maybe even the court to fully understand. So whether we say this was inappropriate discovery sanctions, or by a different name, we say the court allowed this process, it sort of answers the same question. There's a real reason why these procedures exist. It's so we don't have results like this. At the end of this, I see nothing more than the court issued orders, a client failed to provide something it didn't have, and then it received discovery sanctions when no discovery was served. I can't really define it any other way than that. And again, back to kind of your original question, one of my points, the only remedy I see on here is we've got to go back to where the fight began, and that's vacate this award and have a full and fair hearing on this dispute with all the facts.
Counsel, let's go back to the October 14th, 2021 court order granting the motion to compel the appraisal, staying discovery on coverage issues, but requiring your client to supply information.
Yes.
That had been requested. Are you saying that the court did not have authority to do that?
I think at that point the court did. The court was compelling requests that had been made prior to the start of litigation. Those were letters from, I believe, July and earlier that October before the litigation had begun. It was saying, we're going to compel this appraisal because it's the right venue for the dispute. But there are some outstanding requests that are relevant to this. We're going to tell you you have to provide that. Okay? And we did. There isn't a dispute that those requests were fully responded to. The dispute arises 5 months later under new requests that hadn't previously been made. So order one has enough legal footing that I think it stands up. But I think when we start with orders two, three, and four, I think that's where the court loses me, and now that's where it's punishing us for new information requests that aren't appropriate, that are during a stay of litigation and are not subject to proper discovery. So I think it really is orders two, three, and four, Your Honor, in which we start going off the cliff.
Would you agree that it appears, and this is just an appearance, that the court appeared to be irritated and uncomfortable with what they saw as continual delay?
I'm sorry, I didn't catch the last part, Your Honor.
That the court was irritated and uncomfortable, I'm reading between the lines here, as to what they saw as continual delay on the part of your client to provide information that the court thought was available.
I think that the court thought that my client was hiding something, and whether that's under the guise of delays or failure to provide. If I had to guess, I think the court believed that we were trying to hide something and we're up to no good. There's no truth to that, and you know, if that's an impression of the court, I think you can read between the lines and see that the court didn't like one party as much as the other, I think, in some of these orders. I think that's a fair statement. I also think, though, to close that, Your Honor, I think that's part of the reason why it's so important to follow the right procedure to get there so those issues get fleshed out and we don't have a misconception.
But you can see the first order was at least proper, allowable.
Maybe not perfect, but I think it was allowable, yes.
But somehow the later orders, even though they derive from that order, are not allowable in your mind.
They are. I agree with that. Now, Your Honor, if orders 2, 3, and 4 were derived from our failure to comply with that first order, as in failure to provide that information pre-litigation, I would agree there'd be some footing there.
Okay.
But these were new orders. And as I'm time, I'll reserve any other follow-up answers for my rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, opposing counsel. My name is Chris Goodman. I represent the respondent, Hiscox Insurance Company. I'm going to quote a sentence from addendum page 11. This is the court's order of July 2022. Regardless of policy provisions or past practice, plaintiff is not free to ignore orders of the court. That's the issue that we have here.
Those orders, though, have to be appropriate orders? With proper findings based on evidence in front of the court. I mean, you'd agree with that, right?
I agree with the premise. I anticipate
okay.
The next question.
So
I don't think the orders deviate.
My question for you is, your client represented to the court. I mean, first of all, this is just like one little part of the record in this case. So my first question is, what's your response to Maple Ridge's statement that they complied with the two letters, with the second one was October 4, whatever the date of the first letter was?
The last two orders, which are addendums to begin at addendum page 12 and 28.
No, I don't care what the court said. I want to know what your client's position is and what they did not provide in those two letters that were referenced in the court's first order.
Yes, what I'm saying, Your Honor, is that the argument we made to the court is the finding that the court made in those two orders, that we specifically asked for, among other things, the material that was on the exterior of these buildings because something that didn't come up in the...
Okay, now I'm going to ask, so what else? So it's the siding, the specific, what, make... nature of the siding, what you needed, and then what else did you not get from those first two letters?
Yes, I'm attempting to answer Your Honor's question. When we had an expert look at the property, we determined that the buildings were constructed between 2 and 20 years ago, which means if we go to an appraisal, and this, Your Honors, are the appraisal panel, and you're making an award, you can't apply the same, for instance, price or scope specification to the siding or shingles on all of these buildings.
But that was in all the public... building permits, and DBI in fact, did in 2020 quite a complete report with over 200 photographs. They estimated an exact cost for shingles. So what did you not have that you needed for the appraisal? I mean, that I'll have to tell you, I am quite concerned about the way this came out. Now, whatever we decide on enforcing the court's order or not, but your client represented to the court, the district court, that you only needed this to calculate depreciation. The manufacturer, the color, the style of the shingles and siding, correct? And doesn't that go to coverage, a coverage issue?
No, it's not, Your Honor. If I'm allowed to answer the many questions I've been asked, the appraisal
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm trying to line these up. I've got limited time, Your Honor. When the appraisal panel convenes, the questions are, was the property damaged? Was the property damaged by the peril in question, in this case, hail? Did the property damage exceed the deductible? These kinds of things. Okay, the information that we're talking about in terms of the exterior building components, specifically roofing and siding, comes into play when the panel says the answer to those questions is yes. Now they're going to make an award. If the age and condition of the siding and shingles on the buildings are different, then they need to know whether that same material still exists. Because if it does, then they can make repairs with matching material. You can fix the parts that are damaged and not replace all the shingles, replace all the siding. But advocating for my client, we have to be prepared for the possibility that the matching material doesn't exist. You can't make that determination unless you show up prepared. As an attorney, I try to be prepared. We know whether the specific siding and shingles in each building still exists. Then if it doesn't match, and typically what you do is you bring a sample, then the panel looks, and if they decide that the new material doesn't match the existing material, again, on buildings that are between 2 and 20 years old, then they would reward full replacement of the roofing or siding. We have in the record an affidavit from Jeff Nonhoff with Engel Martin & Associates. He's the third-party group that my client relies on to investigate the claims. And he has explained in that affidavit and to the district court, to answer Your Honor's questions, that we were misrepresenting something to the court, if I'm getting the gist of the question. We explained why that information is necessary, in particular in this case, because the age of the buildings was so much different. Now, the court found, and it's subject to an abuse of discretion analysis, that the information that the appellant ended up getting sanctioned for was not produced and was requested in my letters from July 2021, the day after we got the proof of loss, and again in September 2021.
And what was that specific? What exactly did you not get that your client needed?
Again, if we follow through the four orders, the sanctions were issued because on, I want to say, July 8th, the court set a July 11th deadline, the day before appraisal, for the appellant to identify the manufacturer, the make, the style, the color, the particular shingles and siding on each of these buildings. And they set a Judge Hillen set a deadline the day before the appraisal to do that.
And they provided a fair amount, though, by the noon deadline, right?
They didn't answer that specific question. There were other things we asked for, but that's not the subject of sanctions, so I'm not going to waste my time with that.
But their adjuster said they reached out to at least one of the contractors. The contractor didn't have the records anymore. And so then they sent the sample shingle to some expert who said, oh, and identified the shingle. So there is some truth to it. So why is that wrong? Why is Maple Ridge wrong in saying some of this we just don't have?
The district court found that the failure to comply with its orders was intentional and designed to prejudice my client because, again, what Your Honor and I have been discussing, going back to July of 2021, the letter I send the day after the proof of loss is submitted, among other things, identify the siding and shingles on the buildings. The court in several orders found that information was not provided. It was not provided. What Your Honor is talking about is a letter that Jim Pierce, the public adjuster, produced the day before the appraisal. Some of the
information. Actually, I don't see in your July 21 letter anything about the manufacturer of the. I see repair or replacement. Maybe I'm wrong, but go on with your argument. I don't want to belabor.
It's in the addendum, and we quoted it in our brief, Your Honor. And we've got findings from the district court, subject to an abuse of discretion standard, that the information that was encapsulated, that was requested in that October 2021 order, included, among other things, the identity of the roofing and siding material. To Your Honor's two questions ago, what didn't we get on July 11?
Yeah.
We were told that Jim Pierce had identified the contractor that did the work, Morins, I believe it was called. They said they had the material and they'd bring it to the hearing. But that's not what the judge, Judge Hilden, asked and instructed them to do repeatedly. They were supposed to identify that information. Because when they do, and this is Jeff Nonhoff's declaration, someone in his position will then get a sample, bring it to the panel, and then the panel can look at it and see, does this match the material that's on the property or not? The bottom line here, and my opening point before the questions began, we have a court order that says you need to produce this information and identify the roofing and siding material before the appraisal. That in four different instances, informal hearings, written orders, the plaintiff was instructed, the appellant was instructed to provide that information.
Right.
And they did not.
So it seems like Mr. Hammond was arguing, well, you could have just asked to come look at it, have your experts come look at it and identify that without them doing that. So what's wrong with that argument?
Not an argument that was made to the district court. It's new on appeal. But setting that aside, that visual inspection doesn't work. Obviously, our expert had been to the properties, Your Honor noted. We're aware of that. But that doesn't answer the question. We don't know because we don't have access to the information which contractor did the work, which then tells you, if you're able to contact that contractor, what material they used.
You did know the contractors because you sent a letter to Mr. Hammond, I think, with the list of all the contractors.
So I'm drawing a blank on the date in June, but June of 2022, we have an informal hearing with Judge Hilden, and we get for the second or third time an explanation that they either don't have to produce it or they don't have this information. Within a day or two, I send a letter saying, here are the permits we previously produced. Here are the contractors that are listed on those permits. And I took the time to Google the most recent contact information for each contractor. Would you please contact them? Because we're not their customer. And I don't have subpoena power because at the plaintiff's appellant's request, discovery was stayed. I can't get that information. I'm trying to get it before the appraisal. Nothing happened. We then wrote to the court, I believe it was July 8th. I'm getting my dates mixed up. On July 8th, I wrote to the court to indicate that nothing had been provided. And that's what prompted the court to issue an order saying, okay, you've got to produce this by July 11th. So to say that we didn't get the information, it wasn't for lack of trying on our part to get it in a less intrusive means. But all those permit records are going to tell us is a permit was issued for company X to put roofing or siding on this building. But what material did they use? The permit doesn't say that. If it did, I would never have bothered opposing counsel with that information. So we asked. We asked for the court's assistance to try and spur cooperation. Multiple orders and informal hearings occurred to try and get the information. And when we get to July 11, Your Honor, we don't have what at that point the district court had repeatedly ordered the appellant to produce, which was something kind of documentation identifying the manufacturer, the make, the style, color, et cetera, of the roofing and siding. So not only was the information not produced by the July 11 deadline, but the order also says, the sanctions order from July, you are precluded from seeking compensation for a building for which that information was not provided. And then
like
they proceeded to ask for that.
Asphalt shingles. So isn't it just a question of color at that point? Matching asphalt to asphalt? I mean, we're not talking about clay tiles versus asphalt. And is the siding painted? I mean, I don't understand this, as I can tell from your frustration.
Yeah,
which I apologize for.
No, I have 3 minutes left, and I want to answer Your Honor's questions, and I'm limited by the realities of our proceeding here. Justice Page, I believe in, I'm drawing a blank on the case name, established the matching requirement that we have in this state. And if a policy provides replacement cost coverage, it'll typically say, we'll replace your damaged property with matching like quality or style. That's kind of the general language in the policy. My client's policy is no different. So again, what that means for me, advocating for the insurance company, if I go to an appraisal, I have to be prepared to show the panel what the replacement material that's currently available looks like. If it doesn't match, then the law in this state will tell the panel that they should award full replacement of, in this case, siding or shingles. But they can't make that determination unless they can see, if it's still available, the matching material that's currently on the market. What happens over time, to your Honor's question?
Is this just a typical process? I mean, is the insured always supposed to figure out the material, the make, the model? And that's something that the insurer can demand. And I apologize if the question sounds dense, but I don't know how this process works. And so that background would be very helpful.
No, I'm not offended by the question. It takes a little time to answer it, and I'm limited in time here.
Please, yes, answer the question. Yeah.
Yeah. The problem, to Your Honor's question, it's not unusual at all to ask for this type of information, because although my client insures the property, my client doesn't know the material that is used on that property that is the subject of the appraisal. If it's a hail case, it's the exterior building components, the siding, the shingles, things like that. A gutter is a gutter, so to speak. So it's just a matter of color, but there are dyes and materials that are used when we have especially asphalt shingles that over time the characteristics of them will change. They won't look the same over time. And so what typically happens with a roof when you go to an appraisal is you hold up, if it's still made, the current example of shingle X. But the panel will look at it and say, well, that doesn't match that same type of shingle that was put on the roof 2, 5, 10, 20 years ago. In that instance, the panel will then say, you know what, we need to order award an entirely new roof.
So do you have to match the shingle as it's aged, as its current look, or its original 20 years ago color?
Yeah, Justice Page decision, which I can't believe I'm drawing a blank on, it has to comply with what the policy says. You have to replace the damaged property with like kind quality material. So what I'm saying in Your Honor's question and your other Honor's question, if the shingle that's on the roof is still made, but due to the passage of time, the shingle that's on the roof doesn't match the one that comes off the assembly line, that comes out of the package, then the way the law in the state works is the panel would then need to order a new roof, a full roof replacement, because let's say there are 1,000 shingles and 50 might match the new shingle. You're going to have a jigsaw puzzle for a roof, so you have to replace all of it. And so that's why just showing up to the appraisal and not knowing the type of material that's on the siding or the roof prevents the panel from making that determination. We were trying to get that information far in advance of appraisal.
So what do you do? So two questions. One is the DBI report said that there have been a bunch of replacement shingles just looking at the roof. So things are not matching perfectly regardless. So what do you do then? What do you do then? And then what do you do if you've got a homeowner who just doesn't have the original records anymore?
Right. And we didn't get a representation from the appellant that information wasn't available. After several requests, we get the June order saying, produce it or else. And then within a day, as the district court noted in its, I believe, order number 3, Jim Pierce, the public adjuster, finds the information, which, as Judge Hilden says in his order, implies that the information was available, they just hadn't asked. But to Your Honor's point, something that you mentioned there was one of the things I wanted to get into, but again, I'm limited by time. It wasn't just that the buildings were constructed 2 and 20 years ago. Your Honor mentioned something about the DBI report. It also looks like there had been some exterior building components that were replaced after original construction. That makes it even more difficult to identify what kind of material was on each of the buildings.
But wasn't the ultimate issue what the original shingles and siding were?
No.
I mean, I thought that was what was in your letter.
Well, that would have, at the time,
That letter that Maple Ridge said, oh, we never saw this before, but arguably it was actually in your October letter earlier. But it was, the word original is in there.
The July 2021 letter is sent when we don't know at that time the vintage of the shingles or siding on the buildings.
No, this is your later letter I'm talking about. The one that ultimately leads to, is it March 2022 or something? I don't know, I'm losing my, but the more recent in time. letter, the one that Maple Ridge objected to and said, wait a minute, this is now a wholly new request. And your client said, no, 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 it's included in our October letter, October 21 letter.
Right. Over time, information was produced. As Judge Hilton said, it came out in dribs and drabs and only with the intervention of the court. But obviously, as I continue to send letters following up, what I'm asking for becomes more narrow because some information is produced. I'm not up here saying that they ignored every letter I sent. But the issue became that the sanctions were issued because the identity of the roofing and siding material wasn't identified, wasn't provided by July 11th.
The original. Is that right? That the original roofing and siding?
It would depend on which building we're looking at because not all buildings had the original material on them, which is one of the things I was alluding to before.
I think your letter, though, just said original for all buildings.
All I can say, Your Honor, is if you look at the court's orders, the court repeatedly said and made a finding that the information that was the subject of the sanctions had mm-hmm. been requested going back to 2021, which is what prompted the October 2021 order. So we've made that showing that that argument occurred over more than one informal or otherwise proceeding with the district court, and the district court agreed that we've been consistently asking for, among other things, the identity of the roofing and siding on the property. The last thing I'll say, and unless, of course, there are more questions, Your Honors, is Your Honor said, well, what about if building number three, if the unit owner had replaced the roofing and siding? Don't we have to put the original on? How would that work? Well, our obligation would be to return the property to the condition it was in before the hailstorm.
Okay.
So if I've got siding A originally,
then
siding B, then there's a storm, I got to replace siding B. But again, we can't get that information other than asking the insured to provide it. And that's what we did. And when we didn't get the information, the court sanctioned the appellant. So for that reason, we'd ask Your Honors to affirm.
I have a question. Oh.
Yeah, we're about 5 minutes over the time. I'll just note. Please ask your question, and please feel free to answer it, even if you're getting a blinking light there.
It's not about shingles, so we can.
Okay, Your Honor.
We can put that aside. Would you agree that these requests you made were not formal discovery under Rule 37?
They could be.
Agreed.
Right.
And your opponent has made a point of that this was not Rule 37. Rule 37 would have been much different. And yet the court references evidence preclusion under Rule 37 in its October 19th, 2022 order. It seems to be melding them together now.
2 points. Number one, the orders that were not complied with were discovery orders. They were orders to produce information that was necessary to conduct a proceeding. Because the lawsuit was filed before the appraisal occurred, the lawsuit was filed on the last possible day under the policy. The case was before the court. And so although the case law says you're supposed to do the appraisal before the court proceeding, the plaintiff said, we should stay the court proceeding.
When did they morph from orders into discovery orders? I mean, in other words, you were making simple requests for information,
right,
not under Rule 37. And the court seems to be treating them like Rule 37 discovery. There was never a conference, I take it, a Rule 37 conference of any sort, working through discovery issues?
No, at plaintiff's request, appellant's request, the discovery was stayed. So the tools that would normally be available to conduct discovery were removed.
Okay.
And so when the issue of sanctions came up, and it was challenged, I should say, we pointed to the court's inherent authority to spur compliance with its orders, for instance, Patton v. Newmar case, and also Rule 37, arguing to the court that when you're asking the other parties that are in litigation, the case is filed before the court, to provide information, the failure to do so authorizes the court to issue sanctions under Rule 37.
Okay.
And the court referenced both in its orders.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
Thank you for your argument.
A lot to jump around. To answer a couple questions about some cases, the matching case is Cedar Bluff versus American Family. That's the one where counsel referenced Justice Page talking about an appraisal panel has the authority to determine what the reasonable repairs are as it relates to matching. The second one you had mentioned, Your Honor, about what if there was a previous mismatch. This court addressed that issue in the Meadows of Bloomfield versus State Farm that's been during this calendar year, in which it said it didn't matter. So the appraisal panel can take that in. It doesn't prohibit a full replacement via matching if there was prior repairs. So the Meadows of Bloomfield versus State Farm and Cedar Bluff versus American Family are those two cases. I think the timing matters. I think everybody's kind of got these kind of weird questions of, are we calling an apple an orange? And at what time are, you know, was it discovery or was it not? Was it allowed or was it not? I think, again, like I said, timing matters. The assertion is that the only way that this insurance company to get certain information is if my client gave it to him, of which clearly was not in our possession or control. I think that's problematic because those requests only appear after the appraisal's demanded. So a dispute's been happened. But for Maple Ridge challenging the valuation of this claim, none of this is relevant. It's done. Nobody's doing anything. So I question why those requests aren't relevant earlier. And how come they don't become relevant until there starts becoming court-ordered deadlines of compliance of things that don't exist? I think that my biggest concern, and I think Your Honor touched on this, is I feel like it's a little of a chilling effect on my client and what it could mean. We have a stale litigation. We're just going to, it's okay. We're going to keep pressing litigation and discovery, even though it's not technically happening. We're going to allow it to happen. And then this concept that you're potentially punished for not providing something you don't have. I think that's a troubling standard, and I'm not a big fan of that.
Wait,
in representing
public
insurance.
Your adjuster was able to find it pretty quickly. So how do you respond to that?
I mean, or a little sarcastic,
I mean,
Your Honor.
What
we could find a lot of things.
What was not had? I mean, that what was not provided that could be provided, that's what's not clear to me in the judge's order.
Well,
I just...
Even
and
in
I know
standard.
You're the one saying, well, we provided everything. But you acknowledge there are some things you did not provide or were not able to provide.
Absolutely. Yeah. And Your Honor's question, I think, answers part of my, or gives me part of my answer. There's a clear acknowledgement that our people had to go out above and beyond to find this stuff. There's no allegation that it was sitting here the whole time and we were just, you know, nah, we're not going to do it. In your question, it is a concession that it clearly had to be found outside of our custody. So I give the next question back, Your Honor, and I go, well, where does that line get drawn? At what point in a standard in which we're only required to provide our care, custody, control, or provide authorizations
well,
to get it, where's our burden?
Plaintiff. So if you want to succeed in your claim, it seems like you would get this information together that you're adjuster would have needed it to really make a full claim. I mean, what your adjuster came up with over $2 million, you know, so there had to be data, and was that provided?
But somehow both parties were able to put valuations of the claim together without any of this information, Your Honor, which also says, what was its purpose? And I think you drilled on a couple of those questions earlier. If everybody was able to put a valuation before this appraisal demand, what was the purpose of this stuff? What was its need? And again, I think the standards matter, Your Honor. You're right. I could go get extra stuff. I could do extra things that I'm not required to. But there's a reason why there's parameters built into these requests. It's because there's no end to that. If you say, well, you could have went above and beyond and got some more stuff, where does that line get drawn? How many letters do I get from counsel of another request and another request? Well, you got that, you could get more. Why don't we keep going? It creates a problem where we get to this very place. It's we created a standard in this case that my client couldn't comply with, and then my client got punished for it. That's not a standard that this court should uphold. So I'll leave with simply, and I'll beat my dead horse here, that my client had discovery sanctions in which a case where no discovery was served on it. I don't think that's appropriate. And the only remedy that I can think to ask this court for is to vacate that award and allow my client to have a full and fair hearing on all the evidence of this disputed claim.
Did the district court make any errors in its findings? In its orders?
Yes. I mean, the findings that information was requested, and you'd have to go back to the record to get the exact things. I think there was a mischaracterization by the court of what had been requested and when. And I think the overall factual finding of there was a requirement, an inherent requirement to produce these things, I think that's a factual error as well, Your Honor. Thank you very much.
Thank you both for your very helpful arguments this morning. The case is now submitted to the court, and we will issue our decision within the statutory time frame.
Thank you.
Thank you.